She had been awake for 4 days when she went to her doctor's appointment. She had noted this later in the way that you reconstruct a timeline from the other side of an event, assembling what was visible before the thing that made everything before it matter. 4 days without sleep, a feeling she described as the thoughts coming too fast and from the wrong direction. She had tried to describe this to the doctor at the appointment, used the words she had, told him that something was wrong, that she did not feel like herself, that the noise in her apartment had started to feel like something directed at her specifically. The doctor had documented the visit. The chart note read, "Discussed postpartum adjustment. Patient advised rest and fluid intake. Follow up in 2 weeks." She did not make it to the 2-week follow up. Postpartum psychosis is a psychiatric emergency. It occurs in approximately 1 to 2 women per 1,000 births. Rare enough that most people have never heard the clinical term. Common enough that several thousand women in the United States experience it each year. It is not the same as postpartum depression, which is far more prevalent. It is not the same as the baby blues that most new mothers experience in the first weeks. Postpartum psychosis is an acute break from reality, hallucinations, delusions, confusion, rapid mood shifts, behavior that is not continuous with the person's prior personality or values, that typically emerges within the first 2 weeks after delivery, often within the first 72 hours. It is biologically driven, connected to the extreme hormonal shifts of the postpartum period, and it is treatable. It is a medical event. The person experiencing it is not herself. The medical community agrees on this. What the legal system has struggled to agree on is what it means. The legal treatment of postpartum psychosis in the United States has been inconsistent in ways that the medical literature documents and that advocacy organizations like Postpartum Support International and the National Alliance on Mental Illness have spent years attempting to address. In England and Wales, a specific provision of the Infanticide Act allows for reduced criminal liability when a woman kills her infant while the balance of her mind is disturbed by reason of not having fully recovered from childbirth, a legal recognition established in 1938 that the postpartum period can produce a specific category of criminal incapacity. The United States has no equivalent. Criminal liability for actions taken during a postpartum psychotic break is determined by the general not guilty by reason of insanity standard, which varies by state, which is notoriously difficult to establish, and which, when it fails, produces convictions for murder or aggravated manslaughter of women who were, in the clinical judgment of the medical professionals who evaluate them, not in contact with reality at the time of the act. The case that arrives here is not a single case. It is the general shape of dozens of cases documented in criminal records, in clinical literature, and in the files of organizations that track outcomes for women who harm or kill their infants during postpartum psychiatric emergencies. The shape of these cases tends to be consistent. A woman experiences symptoms, paranoia, hallucinations, sleep disruption, thoughts that have a different texture than anything she has experienced before. She seeks medical care, or she is brought by a partner or family member. The care she receives does not escalate appropriately. She is sent home at some point in the days or weeks that follow. In a state of acute psychosis, she causes harm to her infant or kills the infant. She is arrested, she is charged, she is tried. The medical experts who testify at her trial say, consistently, she was in a psychotic break. She did not know what she was doing. The delusions were specific and documented. A belief that the infant was not her child, that someone had switched them, that the infant was in danger from another source and needed to be protected by an act she experienced, in the distorted logic of the psychosis, as protective. None of this is unusual. It is the documented phenomenology of postpartum psychosis, described in clinical literature with enough consistency that researchers can predict with reasonable accuracy what the delusional content of a postpartum psychosis will involve. The legal outcome, in the cases that do not result in acquittal by reason of insanity, is a conviction that applies the standards of a person who was in full possession of her mental faculties. There is a specific element of these cases that the maternal health advocacy community has documented with increasing urgency, and it is the OB appointment. In a significant number of cases in which a woman with postpartum psychosis subsequently harms or kills her infant, there is a prior contact with the healthcare system in which symptoms were reported and not escalated. The chart note says rest. The chart note says normal postpartum adjustment. The chart note says patient is experiencing common new parent fatigue. The window between the appointment and the incident is the gap that the system did not close. It is measurable in days. It is filled, in the documented cases, with a cascade of symptoms that the woman and the people around her did not have the clinical vocabulary to name or the institutional access to address. The racial dimension of this pattern is documented and persistent. Black women in the United States experience perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, including postpartum psychosis, at rates equal to or higher than white women, and are diagnosed and treated at significantly lower rates. The research literature attributes this gap to a combination of factors: implicit bias in pain and symptom assessment, lower rates of postpartum depression screening in under-resourced delivery settings, cultural barriers to disclosure, and the persistent documented tendency of medical providers to underestimate the severity of symptoms reported by Black women. The gap is not uniform across healthcare systems, but it is consistent enough across the literature to constitute a pattern. A Black woman reporting to her OB that she has not slept in 4 days and that her thoughts are coming from the wrong direction is, in the documented statistical picture, less likely to receive a psychiatric referral than a white woman reporting identical symptoms. This does not mean every case involves negligence. It means the aggregate of how symptoms are assessed and escalated shows a disparity that has been measured and is not random. What the woman in the examination room with the chart note that says rest does not know is that she is inside a statistical pattern that has a known outcome when the gap is not closed. She does not know the literature. She knows that she told her doctor something was wrong, and he did not appear to find it alarming, and so she concluded that perhaps it was not as alarming as it felt. This is how trust in medical authority operates. You bring what you have. You accept the calibration you are given. You go home. The mercy in postpartum psychosis, if that word belongs anywhere near it, is that it ends. The psychosis resolves with treatment. Antipsychotic medication, hospitalization, stabilization. The woman who was not herself during the acute phase becomes herself again. She remembers nothing of the psychotic period, or she remembers fragments that have the quality of a nightmare she cannot locate in her waking life. She wakes up into the understanding of what she did in a state she cannot now access or explain. She wakes up into charges. The legal process that follows the recovery is one of the documented cruelties of the current system's failure to have a specific legal category for this event. She is recovered. She is the person she was before. The person she was before would not have harmed her infant. The person she is now does not remember being the person who did. What the law requires her to prove, in states where the insanity defense is available and the standard is not impossibly high, is that the person she was during the psychosis did not know that what she was doing was wrong. The standard is cognitive, the psychosis is affective, perceptual, delusional. The fit between the standard and the condition is imperfect, and in cases where the jury does not understand postpartum psychosis, the gap between the legal test and the medical reality produces a conviction. In England, she would be charged with infanticide. The maximum sentence is life imprisonment, but most cases result in a community order or a hospital order. In several U.S. states, she serves a sentence for murder. The question that the case documentation leaves open, in case after case, is the OB appointment, the chart note, the window, the gap between what was reported and what was escalated. It is not always possible to establish, legally, that the failure to escalate constitutes malpractice. The standards for malpractice are specific, require expert testimony, require establishing the standard of care and its deviation, require causation. Many families do not file malpractice claims. Many that do face a legal process that is expensive and slow. The outcome is not the same as the outcome of the criminal proceeding. What the gap produces, in the aggregate of documented cases, is a consistent finding. Women told their doctors, the doctors did not act with the urgency the symptoms required. The women were charged, tried, convicted. The chart note remained in the file, saying rest. Whether the criminal verdict accurately represents what happened is a question the legal system has answered one way in case after case. Whether it is the right answer is a question the people who study this, the psychiatrists, the maternal health researchers, the reproductive rights advocates who have tracked these outcomes for decades, continue to ask. They are asking it in the direction of legislative reform, of training programs for OB providers, of screening protocols that would close the gap before the window passes. The window is measurable. In the documented cases, it is often day. The outcome of letting it close unaddressed is the kind of thing that ends in a courtroom when the woman who is now fully herself is asked to account for what the woman she was not is said to have done. Was she responsible? The medical record and the criminal record give different answers. That gap is not a technicality. There is a specific way that the legal system's failure to recognize postpartum psychosis as a distinct category of criminal incapacity interacts with the maternal healthcare system's failure to escalate symptoms. Neither system alone is sufficient to produce this outcome. Both together are. The OB, who does not escalate, sends a woman home from an appointment believing she has been assessed and is not in crisis. The criminal system that receives her after the incident applies a standard that does not capture the specific nature of her impairment. The woman falls between two systems that were individually not designed with her situation in mind, and the gap between them is where the outcome lives. Reform proposals exist. Postpartum Support International and the National Institute of Mental Health have both published recommendations for universal postpartum mental health screening, for specific training on postpartum psychosis recognition for OB providers, and for legislative reform that would create a specific legal category equivalent to the UK's Infanticide Act. None of these proposals has become federal law. Several states have made incremental progress. Most have not. The woman in the examination room with the chart note that says rest does not know any of this. She knows she has a doctor she trusts, and she has told him what she can, and she is going home. She will try to rest. In a few days, if the trajectory holds, she will have no access to the self who made that promise.